Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another week of the Brad and Body Podcast. Hello, Body. How are you, mate? How's beautiful Adelaide?
Adelaide's good because, you know, life is relatively normal here. We're very, very fortunate at the moment that the situation with COVID isn't as drastic as it is in the rest of the country. But let's move forward.
Yeah, we're normal here in Sydney. We've only been in lockdown for 6.5 years, so it feels great.
Brad, if you're normal, then that's a good reason to stay out of New South Wales. Anyway.
Well, thankfully, we have someone normal on the show today, and this one I've been really looking forward to. We have Basketball Australia's CEO, and this is someone, Matt Scriven, who we've been trying to get on for a while. He's a former managing director of Channel 9, but he has some fantastic basketball background. He played Siebel for Nunawading, Bulleen and Knox. He knows his way around the court, and someone that Body and I really looking forward to, especially after what a great Olympics we had. Matt, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Just in terms of no way around the court, probably more no more way around the bench more than anything. So, appreciate and looking forward to the chat.
Well, the first question I've got for you, Matt, is what drew you to this position? Because your resume suggests that maybe this wasn't, well, you know, reading your resume, like Channel 9 director for quite some time, the other places that you've been involved, just what appealed to you about being the CEO of Basketball Australia?
Oh, I mean, I think, I sort of always felt that, you know, there was an opportunity to work in basketball, and obviously my career took me down a different path. You know, I worked at the NBL for a couple of years in the late 90s when the NBL was in Melbourne, and it transitioned from a winter to a summer sport. And that was, you know, I really enjoyed that. The NBL moved to Sydney at that stage, if you remember. And
yep.
I was pretty much settled in Melbourne and didn't want to sort of pursue that going to Sydney. So it ended up at Channel 9. And, you know, obviously my career took me down a certain path there, but always had a passion and a desire to get back in basketball at some level, and always thought I would. And, you know, when this opportunity came up and a few people had sort of had a chat to me, and I sort of thought about it for a bit, and I thought there was a significant opportunity to combine my professional experience with, you know, my basketball passion and knowledge, and give back to a sport that I think has given me so much, and obviously so many others at a time when I think there's significant growth and opportunity in it.
We've got a lot of questions that we want to get through and talk about, obviously, the role, but I'd like to go back a little bit. Where did basketball start from you? I mentioned in the beginning that you played Siebel, but talk to us as a child. Where did it start? How did you get involved?
Well, I started through, you know, I think a leaflet coming through to the primary school and at the local, you know, in Glen Waverley where I grew up, and, you know, got involved at the MEBA, which is Nunawading, Melbourne's East, and at that stage ended up playing sort of domestic for the local EBs there, and then progressed into, you know, the Nunawading Spectres system, which at that stage was sort of mid-80s and had the NBL team there back in the day. You know, coached by Barry Barnes.
Yeah, great.
And had some, you know, came through that sort of system at a time when Nunawading was, you know, the be-all and end-all. And, you know, guys like Shane Heal, Tony Ronaldson, Jason Smith of the world. So I was fortunate enough to come through that program right until, you know, sort of first couple of years of under-20s and started playing sort of the Siebel first couple of years there. And, so very fortunate enough to play in that program over the journey.
So you also worked within the NBL for a while there in the 90s. It was marketing and sponsorship, is that right?
Yeah, so that was sort of the late 98, 99, and I just sort of, you know, finished sort of playing. I just finished my degree and an opportunity came up. So very much working more in the, you know, the players used to get out and do a lot of activations in schools, et cetera. So I was in the marketing team, was under a CEO at the time was John Reimars, if you remember.
Good.
And that was, you know, some great Kev Diggerson, which you probably know, Body. Roz Heels, Peter Johnson. So, and they're based in Glen Iris there, Gary Fox, Billy Mildenhall. So it was some fun times.
Good names,
and that was
there.
Well, yeah, I used to call John Reimars, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, no Reimars or reason. When I was writing my column, because there was one stage where he only wanted to have 8 players in a team so that he could have more people sitting on the paying extra money sitting on the bench, spectators. Yeah, he had some good ideas, John. Yes. So from there, though, what happened then? Like your involvement with basketball. I see you're on the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix board. So obviously you've kept one hand in basketball even when you've been doing other things.
Yeah, I have. I've always stayed in and around it. You know, having kids, my youngest son plays out at Hawthorn Magic in the VJBL there, as sort of the Basketball Hawthorn Association. So, you know, I've been back involved in that on the board there for, you know, sort of 4 years and sort of looking after the rep side of the program. I've sort of coached, or the last 4 years coached in the state development program for BV. And then, yeah, spent the last couple of years on the Phoenix sort of advisory board, because obviously they've got a significant ownership structure that exists overseas. So we had a good group that sort of got together on a regular basis and worked with Tommy Greer and the team. And, that was an exciting time.
So, Matt, when you're sitting down with Basketball Australia and going through this role and, yes, this is what I'm going to do, what do you feel was their sort of request for you, what the biggest challenge, but what did you feel would be the biggest challenge moving forward in your role?
If I go to the first part of that, I think there's a significant opportunity in the marketing commercial space. I think, BA has traditionally probably been quite a heavy governance operations-based organisation. And I think, you know, when you look at the sport itself, it's relatively healthy at the grassroots and participation level. I think, you know, obviously there's room for improvement and growth there, but the significant opportunity for basketball in this country is around, you know, the profile of it and the commercialization. You know, I think government funding is such a significant part of our sport. So to ensure, you know, the longevity and sustainability into it, we need to be more commercially sustainable and successful. So they're probably two major areas of opportunity, and obviously with sort of my background lends itself relatively aligned to that. I think the second part is obviously getting alignment in the sport. I think there's, you know, as you'd be aware, it's quite a fractured sport. But, you know, I think there's a significant opportunity to align the sport to achieve a common goal, and across all areas, and particularly across three areas, I think participation, pathways and performance. So that's a significant opportunity around the key stakeholders.
Do you think, Matt, that you might have missed an opportunity with marketing, and especially through merchandising with the Boomers, that you maybe could have anticipated that they would do well enough that, you know, singlets coming off the already being in the Kmarts of this world with Boomer singlets with Mills on the background back of it or Ingles, you know, like I just felt that was like a slow to sort of react to that. I thought we should have had all the stores full of that sort of stuff. Do you think you missed an opportunity there?
I think a little bit. I think, you know, we sort of, it's probably a timing thing as well, and you've got challenges around what happens with, you know, existing relationships, and obviously, you know, the Olympic uniform is different to a lot of sports, so that poses challenges around our ability to be able to do things with that. And you'll notice recently that, you know, the launch of a couple of T-shirts, which, you know, sort of filled a void in that space, because you do have challenges around sort of existing licensing agreements. But, you know, we're just in the process of trying to line that up a lot better so we can be far more nimble and agile and take advantage more tactically of those opportunities, because we probably weren't geared up well enough as an organisation.
Were you jumping off your couch, or were you there when it happened, when they won the bronze medal?
Not definitely not there, but probably never screamed at the television as much.
Australia.
Seeing some of the images and content come back on that moment was just, you know, it's just fantastic for our sport. You know, I think at that moment in time was, it was special.
Yeah, we can't relive it enough.
Oh, I agree. The one that sticks in my mind when you do that is like when Aloisi scored that goal to take Australia to World Cup. That's what I felt when I saw Patty Mills crying, when all those things. It was just second to none. So I'm going to go to the next level. How do you, and I know Boddy said about uniforms, what do you do now to translate that to the kids to keep the sport growing and getting them engaged? How do you do that?
Well, I think there's probably a few parts to that. Is you know, one is that aspirational piece. I think it's really important in anything that, you know, a 5, 6, 7, 8 year old can look up and see the, you know, the pinnacle and the pathways. So using those players as ambassadors and that aspirational piece is really important. I think, you know, the significance around merchandise becomes really important, you know, and the attitude around that was not so much around, you know, making money, but it was about trying to get as many of those T-shirts in the hands of kids where, you know, we wanted to see thousands of kids walking around in Boomers or Opals T-shirts and singlets and merchandise. So that's another part of it. But I think there's a broader piece around more of a consumer brand around marketing, I think, and basketball. I think, you know, no one loves the Basketball Australia brand or Basketball Victoria or Basketball South Australia, but I think there's a significant opportunity to start talking about why basketball. And I think the exciting part that we saw with the Boomers particularly was not so much the bronze medal was great and seeing that history come back to the fore in that moment of time, but the exciting part for us, I think, as a sport is to see what people started to gravitate to, and that was, you know, the culture, the teamwork, team before self. You know, that's the part that I think, you know, from a consumer campaign point of view, if we can get that part right, we really start to differentiate why basketball versus other sports. And, you know, it's about life skills. It's about social cohesion, inclusiveness. And that's the exciting part for our sport with some of the messages that came through out of the Olympics.
Absolutely. But right now, we've seen a shift because if we go back as far as, say, Seoul in 1988, where the Opals played off for bronze and they really captured the country's imagination, at that time, I don't think the BA or WNBL took any real advantage of that good feeling and the goodwill that was generated by that. Hopefully you can do that now with the Boomers because we've had that great response right around the nation. As you say, you were yelling, we were yelling, everybody was yelling at their TV, excited, jumping up. But I see some real challenges now in the women's program because, you know, I'm just seeing that, especially with AFLW now becoming a more prominent player than it ever has been before, and kids or young girls gravitating towards other sports. You know, I'm coaching in junior girls basketball at the moment, and I've got a little bit of talent around, but a lot of the kids are also playing football and getting, I mean, traditionally it was netball, but I mean, how do we keep these kids or keep bringing girls in, particularly right now, when the Opals weren't that exciting? I don't think too many people were tuning in after their first couple of games, and we have this real threat from AFLW.
Yeah, I mean, they're all valid points. I think just on the Opals, I think, you know, we talk about the Boomers, but when you talk about, you know, probably arguably one of the most successful Australian teams, regardless of sport, over the last 25 years has been the Opals, right? So,
totally.
You know, I think, you know, there's a little bit of a speed hump, but I think, you know, the opportunity now to rebuild and head towards the FIBA Women's World Cup in 12 months' time is significant, right? So, you know, I think we've got to rebuild and get that back on track, and it's not going to take that much, you know, WNBL season. But, you know, I think there's one of the things that I think, you know, we are starting to look at now is how do we get that consistency with our national teams over the course of the year rather than, you know, the Comm Games and World Champs and Olympic spikes. You know, FIBA's putting in more windows now. You know, our women are about to go off to the Asia Cup. So how can we play a role locally here in hosting more games so we keep that national content and brand top of mind more consistently rather than dipping in and dipping out? So I think that part of it's really important. I think then, you know, the second part is about driving a much more consistent and aggressive marketing campaign off the back of the recent success and engaging with the, you know, with the consumers on a level that they haven't been engaged before. So I think we've got to get our content story right. We've got to get our content strategy right and the engagement levels with the market.
Yeah, I mean, the World Championship or the World Cup, that's going to be huge and a huge opportunity for you to sort of restore the Opals brand. I mean, the way I'm thinking, I'm glad we're the host nation because I wouldn't like to be wanting to qualify right now.
No, I think, you know, I mean, there's a lot of resilience in that group. And,
right.
You know, I think, we'll see a team and I think we'll have a great WNBL. I mean, the WNBL season is going to be really critical to starting that process and having a really strong season and foundation for most of those players who are going to be playing in that league is critical. And then going on to the campaign, you know, leading into the Women's World Cup. And, you know, I know Sandy and the coaching staff and, I think that they're confident around what they can build. You know, sure, Tokyo was disappointing, but there was a lot of challenges, you know, thrown into that group over the course leading into it. And I think at the end of the day, you know, the way they were and some of the, you know, the challenges that they overcome was we should be proud of those girls as well.
Yeah, when you talk about the NBL, I'm quite interested, and I talk NBL and WNBL here. What sort of hold or discussions does Basketball Australia have with those leagues? Is there a committee? Are you on a board? Is it outside? Just talk to us a little bit what you do with that.
So structurally, I mean, there's a WNBL commission that exists. So BA has a significant role in that, obviously, and that's represented by the eight WNBL clubs. Obviously, the NBL structure is a little bit different. Obviously, Larry owns that league and we have regular dialogue with Larry and Jeremy around, you know, what they're doing. And, you know, we work, you know, quite well with both Larry and Jeremy. And I think they've done a great job with the NBL, with particularly the NBL. So there's the consistency and structure over those two leagues. You know, I think the WNBL's got a significant opportunity to raise its profile off the court. I think the product itself on the court is exceptional, you know, arguably one of the best leagues outside the WNBA. But we've got a great opportunity off the court to lift that profile, and there's a lot of learnings that can come through what Larry and Jeremy have done with the NBL as well in that space.
With the WNBL, Matt, well, do you know exactly when you're ready to launch the next season, or is there going to be a hub situation? Are you waiting to see what evolves in Victoria due to COVID? Like, it's sort of, the NBL has made some announcements as to starting dates, etc. But what's the immediate plan for the WNBL, or is it still just a wait and see process?
Oh, there's lots of, I mean, there's a group of people across many layers, both league and clubs meeting almost daily on various elements of that, you know, because it is such a moving feast. And, you know, number one thing is that we get a season away, what that looks like. There's variances and contingencies around that. And it's a lot of it's about risk mitigation as well. You know, the season has been pushed back and it'll start the end of November, just to give a little bit more time to understand the landscape. You know, we've got to be very careful about what we do with our player welfare as well, because quarantine is such a significant part of it. You know, and the worst thing we can do is continually stick our players in, you know, quarantine, regardless of whether that's 7 days or 14 days. So there's a fair bit of navigation that's got to go around the season, but that planning is in place on a daily basis.
Okay.
I'd love to, I know we touched on it before. Number one, what a spectacular thing that would be to have the USA men and women's team come out here and play Australia men and women's team. How difficult will that be? I know you're saying you're trying to get more. How do you go about that?
Oh, I mean, we have, you know, great dialogue with USA Basketball. Jim Tooley, the CEO there, and the commitment around sort of, you know, working together. I think as two nations, we're probably more intrinsically linked than ever before. You know, look at the pathways that exist between Australia and USA from an athlete point of view, and even now from a coach point of view, even, you know, as recent as Matt Nielsen joining, you know, the San Antonio Spurs assistant coach. So I think there's acknowledgement from both federations that, you know, we're great allies. So the intent is there. And then it's just about, you know, the planning and fitting around, particularly, you know, the NBA players and WNBA players into their schedules and how that sort of suits. So, you know, the dialogue is very open and proactive, but it's, you know, there's a fair bit of logistics that have got to go into planning a series like that.
Interesting. I have a query. There's a, I don't know if you can really answer this, but does it disturb you to see the lack of Australian coaches in the NBL? By that, I mean Australian-born coaches. That there seems to be a shift now towards bringing in Americans or foreign coaches. Does that concern you going forward as to our future with national coaches producing them? You know, but is it a worry?
I mean, on face value, of course, we want to see as many Australian coaches coaching, you know, both locally and overseas, I think. But I think the whole, you know, pathways now has changed so dramatically, right? You look at Liz Mills, coming, you know, with Nigeria overseas as well in terms of, and as I said, you know, like Matt Nielsen and Sandy Brondello, guys like Dave Patrick and, you know, we're now much more on a global scale. So I see that sort of, you know, toing and froing between those sorts of nations and more globally. But, you know, of course, we want to see more Australians coaching. I think coach development is a big area of focus, I think, to ensure that we give ourselves, you know, the best opportunity to have more coaches. You know, I think it's good to have some focus on the elite level, but I think we've got to fill the funnel from a participation point of view and put them through the pathways to get to the elite level. So, you know, of course we want to see more at the top end, but we've also got to do a job at the bottom end to ensure that we, you know, we have large numbers coming through as well.
Right. Look, ahead of the Opals campaign, as you said, they had some difficulties to deal with ahead of Tokyo even, or before the tournament even began. There was going to be some sort of investigation into the circumstances around the Liz Cambridge situation. I just wondered if you could give us an update on where that might be.
Yeah, so that's in the process as we speak. So obviously, you know, I can't comment too much on that, but yeah, that's in play as we speak, and hopefully get some conclusion on that over the next week or two.
And what this could be a really ignorant question, and if it is, I apologise. But like the broadcast of the World Cup next year, like is that all finalised? Do we know what network it's on, or where we'll be able to watch that if we can't get to the games just to watch the Opals in action?
So that's in its final stages now, and obviously the LOC, you know, deals with that, and obviously we have some involvement in that. But Melissa King and her team at the LOC, who running the event, are in negotiations. And from a broadcast deal, you know, not sure if you're aware, but FIBA actually negotiates those. You know, obviously we're involved, but the actual ultimate negotiation is done by FIBA themselves. So they're in the final throes of that, and hopefully there's some sort of announcements over the next couple of weeks of what that looks like.
And Matt, what does the future look like in your eyes? Like what is your vision? You know, where would you like us to be in, say, 3-5 years, or at the end of your time as a CEO? What would you like to have seen happen in basketball? What do you see for us, Matt?
I mean, vision, it's a big question. Obviously, we're at the start of a strategic plan as well, and that's got some key, you know, three or four key areas attached to that, and really simplified around participation growth, commercial growth, high profile and high performing teams is the sort of the three and four key objectives.
Can I then ask, Matt, any of the discussions at the moment involve Brisbane Olympics, or is that in your mind too far away?
No, it's not too far away. I mean, you know, we are just embarking on an external high performance review to understand what that looks like, to ensure that we're, you know, structured well. Are our resources enough? Are they pointed in the right direction? You know, what's our pathways look like from a COE? What's our culture like? You know, what's the pathways looking down in the state development programs coming through into places like the COE, then international teams? And they're all, you know, live conversations as part of a review to ensure that we're set up ready for 2032. You know, so those sorts of things are ongoing, and 2032 is not that far away if you don't get the planning right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're chasing your tail in 5 or 6 years.
Do you ever see, I was reading recently where I think a velodrome is going to be built in Brisbane, and Cycling Australia, I think, is moving from South Australia to Brisbane. Do you ever see that could happen because of the infrastructure that may go in building and Basketball Australia move?
I sort of have a view of, you know, I think we're now operating in a world where there's not one necessary destination. I think, you know, the ability to work across multi-markets, be that even local or international, is the way businesses operated now. And, you know, I'm not adverse to having, you know, Basketball Australia representatives in multiple markets, depending on what the objectives are and what they're there to do. But, you know, there'll be some significant infrastructure put into Queensland. And I think, you know, Queensland as a whole is a significant growth opportunity for our sport. So I think it'll have wonderful, you know, leading and legacy benefits. And if BA has a part in that, well, you know, you look at it at the time. But I'm sort of, you know, not of the view of we have to be in one location and that's it. I think there's multiple ways to look at it.
Yeah, good answer. Mm.
I just want to pop back to what you said a moment ago about the review of high performance. I'm just curious what the process is for the selection of national coaches, especially at the junior levels. What is that process?
Well, they have, I mean, you know, Jan Sterling runs, you know, high performance, and there's, you know, ongoing work that's done in that space through depth charts and, you know, through some of the broader, you know, level accreditation courses that are done. Pete Lonigan does a lot of work with, you know, sort of the high performance coaches in each state across the board. So there's a consistent, rigorous process that currently exists. I mean, you know, Jan and Pete particularly know, you know, all the coaches that are there and work with them on certain areas, and obviously look at their, you know, their broader development. But and then there's a normal application process that happens from there. So, you know, the depth chart is not just a player thing. It's also, you know, exists from a coaching point of view. And I know, you know, both Sandy and Brian work with Jan and Pete around what that looks like for, you know, other both junior and national teams that they don't coach at different windows. So, you know, their knowledge is vast in that space.
Matt, I don't want to leave out, we have a lot of supporters that are referees, and I'd love to hear your take on where the referees come under Basketball Australia's banner and what's in it for them.
Yeah, so, I mean, the referees and officials is a significant part, and like sort of the coaching side, I think is under, you know, sort of not resource, but focus and putting some programs in place to deliver that. So, you know, Michael Haynes, who heads up, you know, our education development, has a strong referee focus in that space. You know, we just announced, obviously, the FIBA referees that have come through the system, and I think there's an enormous opportunity to continue that development, you know, and ensuring that, you know, at a local level, clubs, associations, states and territories have the right programs in place, have the right opportunities and the right sort of, I suppose, mindset around joining to be an official or referee or even administrator in that space. So, I mean, referees, I think, is a significant growth opportunity for our sport. Fundamentally, they become administrators of a game. And I think there's opportunities to upskill them in not just the technical side of it, but also around managing a game situation as well. Because, you know, having seen guys like, you know, sort of Eddie Crouchers of the world and Billy Mildenhall's and the Ray Hunts, the way they manage games is important as what the technical side is as well.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Right. I've got just a final one to throw at you. The appointments of our Boomers and Opals coaches, Brian, is he continuing? Is Sandy just continuing? Are they just rolled over into the position, or is that going to, you know, what is the process involved there? Because we've got a world championship here next year, and then we've got Olympics within three. So where are we?
So Sandy is continuing, obviously, and she's got that contract through to Paris. And then Brian is obviously, we're working on that as we speak, but the desire and his desire to continue, because obviously he was brought in off the back of, you know, Brett not being
yes.
able to do
yes.
So, you know, I think we'd love for Brian to continue. I mean, he did an exceptional job in Tokyo, and brought that group together and harnessed the talent that existed. And we're very fortunate to have someone like Brian, not only from his experience, but also as an individual, lead that group. So that's ongoing.
Okay.
Matt, you are a very busy man, and we got the questions we wanted to get. It wasn't that bad, so thank you so much.
you got through all right?
Yeah. No, all good.
We really appreciate you coming on. It's so intriguing to hear what goes on behind the scenes. We wish you all the best. Certainly after this last 30 minutes listening to you, I know we're in good hands. So thank you so much, and good luck, and thanks for coming on.
No worries. We really appreciate you taking the time, and also then what you do from a broader promotion of the sport. I think it's these types of things that drive deeper engagement and ensure our sport thrives and continues to grow.
Was good, buddy. I enjoyed that.
So do I, because I don't think a lot of people in Australian basketball were really aware of who the new CEO is and how much he brings, not just from a business acumen point of view, but he's actually got a legitimate basketball background. So very excited about what he has in mind.
Yep. And what I liked about it, like he is a businessman. He's been there. He's run, you know, big companies. And when you talk to him, you realize just how much is under his banner. You know, You've got Opals, you've got Boomers, you've got all the, you know, Australian teams underneath that, referees. Now they're looking at what's going to happen with the Olympics. Like, mate, it was
And very, state very, associations, got to interact with state associations, got national championships to stage, you know, work things out with the COVID situation. Do we do this? It's very, very tough role. And I think he's well suited to it.
Thank you to all our listeners. We really enjoyed that one. Please, the feedback is great. Make sure you send us through if you want us to interview someone. We had some people saying, I'd love to hear you interview this person or that person. Send it through. We love hearing that. Body, that was a great chat. And please, everyone, don't forget to check in. We're going to be putting out our second five teams, wrapping them. So we have already done Adelaide, Tasmania, Phoenix, Hawks and Kings. We had a pod about that. And we will be bringing out a pod shortly with Brisbane, Perth, Cairns, United, New Zealand, buddy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, mate. I'm just biting into my Burger Boss burger. I'm totally distracted. And, I'll see you next week.
Thank you to our sponsor, Burger Boss. Thank you to Piranha Media. Everyone, have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
So, Brad, you played in a Siebel championship back in 92 and you were all-star five, so you know the Siebel competition really well. Do you remember Matt Scriven as a player? Brad, are you there? Do you remember Matt Scriven as a player?
Well, he did say that he rode the bench. Let's just say his CEO resume is a lot better.